Okay. Let's try and finish before 12:30 or by 12, so that we don't run problems. With your permission, we'd like to defer the minutes again, and let's focus on a substantive presentation. Is that okay? And then I will then call Mr. Bassett, who was Honorable Chavalada, you want to leave the 12?
If it's possible.
Oh, let's make it possible.
We are aware, on the late Amstini's funeral also this morning.
At what time?
I think it's at 10:30. So some of us would need to excuse ourselves to attend the funeral.
Yeah, I think let's just get back to the presentation quickly. We may not have exhaustive discussions with conduct. Are you finding it? Can we start with Mr. Etin? William Booth, where do I get Etin? I'm sorry about that. Okay. So I'll give a presentation.
To answer any questions if necessary. I believe, Chair, we've submitted. So I believe we have submitted comments. The Law Society has submitted comments, and we didn't have written comments. We have submitted comments. And I think earlier this week there were some concerns that there wasn't a presentation from the Law Society of South Africa, as well as any of the other constituent bodies, for example, the Cape Law Society.
Yes.
As a result of that, I was requested to attend the meeting today. Should there be any questions flowing from our comments relating to the debate?
Thank you very much.
So it's not a question of a presentation, Chair, but if there are any aspects, I'm happy to deal with it. I'm a practicing attorney as well, and have a lot of experience on the ground relating to court procedure, appearance, and also the legal aid. I'm also chair of the Cable Society Criminal Committee, Alec Debate Criminal Committee, and previous chair of the Legal Aid Committee at the Council.
No, we appreciate your presence, because we were worried that if you make admission, you don't come,
yes,
and we question, and the questions are not answered.
Yes.
We would simply treat your submission as not made.
Can I just address you on a point of clarity? When parties make submissions to Parliament, it is up to Parliament to request them to attend for an oral submission. And I think we just need clarity going forward, because we get many submissions coming in. It's not practical convention that everyone is expected to be here and make their written submission. Now, we're aware in this situation there are only one or two, but I think just going forward, if we as the committee want people to supplement their written submission, it is normal for us to say, please come and attend so that we can address issues that arise from your submission. Otherwise, we're going to have everyone here on complex good luck. You remember the legal practice for it. It was only those members that made submissions, either asked to make an oral submission, or we then said, please, you must be here. We had hundreds of submissions. We didn't cover everyone. So maybe just clarity going forward. I'm not criticizing you for what happened this week, but just going forward, we can maybe have clarity. Thank you, Chair.
My instructions are that we need to get the particularly some plantations here, because there were also not many, but also it seems to be a lot of very critical role play. It's better to hear them, and rather than just to read the state, but that's why I say we're going to that side. But I agree with you that in future we need to determine who we want to come and be better. What happened to Mr. Patrick?
Endorses the removal of the reference to indigent persons, as I said, which is currently in use in the legal So now it's, if the department would like to obviously increase the PUA, that legal aid is not only for the PUA in the strict sense. In four cases, it's been stated that the actual question is whether a person can afford legal aid, legal representation, for the poor party. Other aspects also need to be considered, in instance, the complexity of the matter, among others. The emphasis of the Constitution is on substantial justice. Having said all that, the department isn't opposed to including possible a reference to vulnerable, because that's what the provision of legal aid is about, not necessarily the indigent, but to the vulnerable. The Bar Council supports the removal of the wording used in the current act, that's legal aid for indigent persons, which is consistent with the constitutional imperatives. Then if we go to clause 41A, provides that the board may do all that is necessary or expedient to achieve the objects referred to in section 3, including the following: provide legal services, representation, and advice by employing legal practitioners, employing paralegals, and procuring services of legal practitioners in private practice. Now, advocate Mighty Stella is suggesting that we should also keep the include the reference to candidate attorneys, and I think that is a good comment and one that should be considered favorably. The Law Society of South Africa, who's their representative today, is suggesting that paralegals should not be allowed to sign pleading to appear in court. This is also suggesting that paralegals must work under supervision. Chair, our response to that is that paralegals will not be able to sign pleadings in that period. They're not allowed to come on. Legislation relating advocates and attorneys have already addressed these concerns. Paralegals are not allowed to sign pleadings and appear in court. And if paralegals are employed by legal aid South Africa, they will fall under the supervision of a legal practitioner of legal aid South Africa. So that they will be working under supervision. So I think that the Law Society concerns have been addressed. Then we come to clause 41F, and it's about the past functions and duties of the board, and the Commission for Gender Equality suggests that the clause must specify that legal representation will be provided to protect women from gender-based violence. Chair, that's a very important proposal, that's very correct, and it should be like that, but the department's response is, and this is come out quite strongly throughout this document and our responses, the matter for which legal aid is granted are currently set out in the legal aid guide, but in terms of clause 24 of our law, these matters will be addressed in regulations. So there's nothing wrong with the proposal of the Commission for Gender Equality, that these concerns can be taken care of in the regulations. What is nice about this bill is that it changes the situation where matters that are provided by legal aid are now set out in a guide which really doesn't have their particular status. In the status of legislation, the law proposes that these issues not be dealt with in a guide, but in regulations which have the status of legislation. So it is moving forward, and I would argue that's what the Commission wants can be addressed in the regulations. Legal aid South Africa, I turn now to Clause 6.1, and Clause 6 deals with the composition and appointment of the Board of Legal Aid South Africa. And Clause 6.1 provides follows: the Board consists of the following voting members appointed by the Minister of Writing. A judge in active service, or a Board referred to in Section 166A(b)(4)(c) of the Constitution, nominated by the Chief Justice. And legal aid wants to play a role in this nomination process as well, in the sense that it would like to be consulted by the Chief Justice when the Chief Justice does the nomination. And it's after consultation, I'd like to point out, not in consultation. Just a bit of history, the previous version of the board did have this in, so the department doesn't necessarily have an objection to this. just to put you in the full picture, the state board advisors, when they certified the board, took out this favor of the view that they might not have, from a practical point of view, the board might dissolve and they might not be in a position to consult. I don't think that this will materialize in practice. I think the department has no objection to this proposal. Still, with clause 6, the commission objects for gender equality, suggests that 50% of the board membership suppose must provide that the board should broadly reflect the racial and gender composition of South Africa. Our response, Chair, is that clause 7C already provides that boards must be broadly representative of the diversity of South African population. However, for the committee consideration, we could consider a provision similar to what we have in the legal practice bill, and some of the committee members might amend the deliberations on this. And one could consider that it's something like we have in the legal practice bill, and I quote, the need for the board to reflect the racial and gender composition of South Africa must, as far as is practicable, be considered where the board is established. Then the Cape Bar Council, also in respect of clause 6, is of the view that the bill should refer specifically to practicing attorneys and advocates and representatives from the state attorney and the director of public prosecutions. If I can just read from the Act of the Prisons. The Act, the 1969 Act, provides as follows in section 4. The board shall consist of one practicing advocate and four practicing attorneys nominated by the General Council of the Bar of South Africa and the Association for All Societies, LSSA, restricted and appointed by the Minister. So that is what the current situation is. It's a specific reference to practicing advocates and attorneys nominated by the GCB and the LSSA. And that's in effect what the Cape Bar Council and the All Society of South Africa are suggesting. Now the Legal Aid South Africa, when we met last week or earlier this week, spoke about this, and spoke about King Free Report, and the response that they gave is actually the department's response as well. The King Free Report iterates that the director has fiduciary responsibility towards the organization and is obliged to display utmost good faith towards the organization. Each member of the board owes such fiduciary duty in the position and directly to the organization as a separate legal entity should reach good governance standards should stakeholder interests be placed above those of the organization. The composition of the board is important in as much as it determines the ability of the board to collectively provide appropriate leadership to the organization. In that case, the board needs to have a diverse range of skills, knowledge in order to perform effectively in its advisory and oversight capacities. Although codes of corporate governance increasingly refer to stakeholders' interests, they seldom propose stakeholders on the board. Principle 1.1 of King Report 3 provides that the board is the link between the stakeholders and the organization, and that stakeholders should be engaged in such a manner that they have trust and confidence in the organization. Principle 8.1 of King 3 Report provides that a stakeholder inclusive corporate governance approach recognizes that an organization has many stakeholders that can affect the organization in the achievement of its strategy and long-term sustained growth. In achieving that goal, boards should identify stakeholders and develop a strategy and suitable policies of how it will manage its relations with stakeholders. So that's what Legal Aid South Africa has already told us to this when we met in brief. I think one should also take on board, Chair, that this Act of 1969, when it was written and when it suggested that the board should consist of one practicing advocate and four practicing attorneys, nominated by the GCP and the LSSA. At that particular time, legal aid was provided through the legal aid board mainly by Judicare attorneys. Those were attorneys practicing and are still practicing in private practice. The board protected them through legal aid group. We have a situation now where most of the persons providing legal aid on behalf of Legal Aid South Africa are not due care practitioners. They are in-house, they call them in-house practitioners. They are attorneys and they are advocates. But they are employed by Legal Aid South Africa, which is really a reversal of what the situation was in 1969. So besides in three aspects and besides what the situation was in 1969, there's a further difficulty really about the existing provision, particularly as far as advocates are concerned, because Section 4 has already indicated that there must be a practicing advocate nominated by the GCP, the General Council of the Bar. Now, since 1969, there are other bodies that under which advocates fall. It's not only the GCP which has the monopoly at that stage. There are advocates for transformation and a few others. So the question, if one wants to go this route, the question then arises, which umbrella body or advocates does one use if there's going to be a nomination by that particular, by the advocates profession? So, Chair, in a nutshell, that's our response to what the Cape Bar Council and the Law Society of South Africa would say.
The definition of legal aid is not wide enough. Because it forces us to a situation where we only cover legal representation. And even if you say that legal representation will cover women and the poor, in my view, not yet sufficient. Because we have attendants that are present, but we also have community-based led legal aspects. And I personally don't see any reason why the community-based legal assistance conducted by paralegals. I think we need to see between paralegals employed by the legal aid and paralegals which are community. And I'll tell you why. Because the majority of the people that seek assistance don't seek assistance of attorneys. Just basic information, basic guidance. For instance, when we have inmates in prison that have been brutalized, they will inform their family. And their family will not have money to go to the prison. But they can go to a community parents who can do it. So in short, I'm saying, why don't we structure it in such a way that we provide for both legal practitioners and community-based paralegals operating within legal advice, and that will cover the jobs of people. Because if we use the concept of substantive justice, we will end up using the money just to defend the international criminals and the other cases of the drug dealers who are caught, and then the money will go, but the majority of the case will not be treated. That's what I want. I think that the concern also comes from the CGP, but also the wider definition also comes from the longer declaration and the UNESCO declaration. So we should look at taking into account the international decision in shaping the new definition. Honorable Charles?
Just on the issue of the composition of the board, I appreciate Mr. Bass's arguments about exclusion of specific references to advocates in the city. You could well now have the situation that there are no representatives from the organized profession, because there's no obligation if you read sub 4 to include any of the organized profession. Now, while your point about the fiduciary duties of board members is correct, but we know in all reality what is at the legal practice law, that you're going to have on that legal practice counsel, attorneys and advocates that what they appreciate their role. It might not be necessarily strictly a board, but the same principle can apply. They will be trying to promote their own interests in addition to the interest of the legal aid board. So I'm just a bit concerned that it seems to be a drastic move from where you have specific reference to organized profession to now have this decision where there's no reference to any member of the profession. Could one not have a situation where you say, well, at least one of which, two of which should be members of the organized profession, so at least you've got that representation. But if you look at section 7D, that's your collective reference to the eight members of the whole board. You've got business management, information technology, legal services, corporate governance, accounting, auditing, community-based knowledge. If you take all those into consideration in the eight for the board, you could well have no organized members of the profession there. And I think that is a concern. We need to find a middle way. I'm not saying necessarily we must get where it was, but we need to find a middle way. And maybe the law society is still, they are young, maybe they've got to comment on that as well, Chair.
I also address, as you read, that if you look at the
bathroom. Yeah, sorry to interrupt you, but that I don't think is correct, because your GCB and your law society have represented the members. Remember when we did the legal practice for the GCB says now tell those bodies represent 50% on the GCB. I think the same applies to the law society. So they're already constituent. And that was a major concern in the legal practice law where we said they've been given a double bite to the cherry. So when we had the nominations for the legal practice law, we said the GCB plus Nardell, and we said no, an advocates for transformation, they're given a double bite because they are already represented in the GCB. So I think we need to clarify that aspect if my memory serves me correctly.
Thank you, Chair. Respond or join in with what it said, if I may.
I think, look, I agree with him, and maybe one doesn't necessarily need the same number as being set out in the Legal Aid Act of 1969. I think we mustn't lose sight of the fact that all attorneys who are employed either as candidate attorneys or as fully fledged attorneys of the Legal Aid Board fall under the jurisdiction of the Law Society in the respective provinces. So they're not a separate entity. They have to comply with the regulatory functions, they have to stop it by writing their exams, they've got to do with letters, and so forth and so on. And if there are any disciplinary aspects relating to contravention of Law Society rules, then the Law Society will step in as a disciplinary body to discipline those candidate attorneys and attorneys. I think that is one of the most important aspects that we mustn't lose track of, because they do fall under the opportunities, and that is why it's important at that level on the Legal Aid Board to have at least some representation from opportunities. Also on the Legal Practice Board, there is representation is allowed specifically for Legal Aid South Africa on the Legal Practice Board. So I think that it is important that one has to at least have, if not for certainly a measure of representation from attorney on the board. I think that can provide a very significant input on the board. As far as advocates are concerned, there are a lot of other advocate bodies that have arisen, if I may use that word, over the years, and not necessarily those that fall under the various bar councils. Now, the advocate's profession is not regulated, it's only regulated, they are, it's different to the attorney's profession. The attorney's profession is regulated by the Attorney's Act. It's actually regulating the advocate's profession. They're all part of various bar councils, which are voluntary organizations. Then you have the criminal bar, you have the bar for transformation, etc., etc. The concern always was that these separate organizations, are they properly regulated? In other words, if there's a disciplinary aspect, I think one mustn't forget, Chair, that all lawyers are there to serve society, serve community, members of the public, right down to the very, very first, and those that can't assist themselves. So I think one mustn't forget that if things go wrong, and over the years we've seen how people have pretended to be attorneys and advocates and have actually abused that position and taken in unsuspecting members of the public. So if there are other organizations that must be included, other than the general bar, then one must make sure that there are sufficient regulatory functions governing those organizations. And I know some of them aren't governed, but I think that is an aspect that we need to maybe engage with every level of advocacy provision. And don't forget, the legal practice book is heading towards doing away with this big gap between attorneys and advocates. Why is there this big distinction? You speak to somebody out in the public, and they will say, well, he's an attorney and he's an advocate. There's some big difference between the two. There isn't. And I think the legal practice bill is trying to equalize the playing field. You have attorneys who appear in court right through to the constitutional court, and I'm referred to on some occasions as an advocate or as an attorney because the public really doesn't know the difference. So we mustn't forget legal practice bill is trying to change that. You know, you become a senior advocate, you can't become a senior attorney. Only possibly when you reach 65 you can become a senior attorney. But you know, and there's this decision. So one must also not forget that, Chair. If I may just also the aspect that you raised with regard to paralegal. The concern is also that the affairs of paralegals need to be regulated, and again that is not something that is dealt with in the legal practice book. So you have paralegals, and it's a wonderful concept that they're out there assisting members of the public at, let's say, a NGO office. They're not linked to a team for the legal aid board or to advocates, but they're out there assisting people who can't and don't have the money to go to a team or to go to advocates. So there needs to be some regulation of that, because you can have members of the public going and getting wrong legal advice. We need to know that there's some form of training, some form of courses they do, and I believe there are organizations who offer training, and after 2 years people can become paralegals, but there must be some kind of something built in to say, well, you know, if there's a complaint, or how do we regulate the way they operate. A further aspect, Chair, is that the Law Society offers pro bono service. So if somebody's in jail and is saying that he or she is being tortured, they can approach the Law Society in the respective provinces and or certain attorneys and get legal assistance. Of course, attorneys have to perform it's up to 24 hours pro bono service a year. It can be much, much more than that. And in fact, there's a recent case from Elizabeth where an attorney a year or two ago took on the whole issue of torture through the United Nations dealing with torture, and it succeeded on a pretty much a pro bono basis, highlighting, I think it was at St. Albans Prison Chair in Port Elizabeth, highlighting the plight of prisoners who were being terrorized and were being threatened and tortured by the members of the Department of Correctional Supervision. So just in summary, Chair, I think paralegals is a great concept. There must be some control. I think attorneys need to be on the board. At least some representation, I think Mr. Swanson may be able to do whatever, because they can play a very, very, very meaningful role there. Don't forget, attorneys are enforced as of the legal aid attorney. So we know what's going on at the grassroots level, and many legal aid attorneys will approach some private practitioner for assistance in matters where they have to present arguments in court. And we do that on our various bodies at the case. Society, for example, we have specialized committees. We have, on my committee that I chair, the Criminal Law Committee at Cape Law Society, we have a permanent representative from the Legal Aid Board who comes to our monthly meetings. So there's this constant engagement and cross-feeding of information. So, Chair, I think that is something that we cannot have happening with respect and also with regard to the advocates we need to look at. I agree, we can't have so many advocates because there are 20 different organizations involving advocates. They need to come forward and say, right, we suggest one, and that can be decided from these various organizations, whether they're not LB, BLA or the so forth. Whatever. Thank you, Chair.
I'm just afraid that you are going to make the work of the entire government and the implementation of the legislation difficult if you insist on the presentation of the legal profession. I will tell you that we are 20 years into our democracy. We have lawyers for human rights. We have DNA, we have my dad. And we expected that we are all engaged in the formation of a non-racial democracy. But the lawyers are lagging behind. And then we had to form the Law Society of South Africa. And that Law Society of South Africa is still organized on a federal basis, because DNA was remained DNA, Mandela was remained Mandela, whereas human rights remain what they are. And I'm just wondering whether race is also not playing with us, or some kind of mistrust. Now we have the advocates of South Africa that goes up, and according to our admission, now there are about 20 bodies, some regulated and some unregulated. Now, to bring all the unregulated people together and say, appoint someone to represent you on the board, will take us another 20. And now we want to implement the law and solve the current problem. And also, if we take into account that, basically, lawyers are an interest of us here. We want people to be judged in their own courts. Don't we trust the board that we set in terms of the criteria? And the lawyers must go do their work, and where they need assistance, apply for that assistance. Why should we insist that the lawyers will be represented when we know that the lawyers can't get their acts together? Their disputes are going to stand in the way of speedy implementation of this. But let me as a board member. But when it comes to paralegals again, I agree with you that maybe we have time to regulate, but I think we need a distinction between public interest law practice and the mainstream practice. So the act in my duty is structured in a way that the public interest law practice and practitioner should have access to legal aid, because they are pledging a substantial segment of the community. So I just want to say that way. Those are just my opinions. Let me open the floor to other members. Honorable
Constructor. Is the way of having representation by the profession not covered by the legal practice bill, where we can say the interim council nominates a practitioner for the legal practice? What is the interim? For the interim council, the national consultation board or something, that they then nominate a few legal professionals, because that is the overarching body that could nominate two members. Obviously, it would be good to have, and I think the attorneys are the board actually, but let's look into it when we draft in. I think it's something, because my concern is at the moment, as it's presently formulated, you may have no legal representatives there as well, from the organized profession. Even I'm talking about the consultative forum. Now remember, that's the interim body that governs the attorney, advocates for transformation, the independent advocates, everything is on that consultative forum. And they could be the body then that nominates two members. I don't know whether that is, but it's a far cry from where it is at the moment. I would prefer that the Law Society nominates an attorney, but I think that we've got to understand that everything is moving towards that body. So it's something we need to deliberate as we're looking at the draft for this law. But I think that they do need to have some say, and then let's flesh out what that say is going to be changed. And I agree with you on the issue of this. I think the paralegal, the way we're going to have to look at that is we're going to have to form some, if
they're entitled to any form of and I think the legal aid board are here, right? If I understand what you are inclining towards is that they should be funded by the legal aid board, then you're going to have very close regulation before that is set in place, because you're going to, but then it's got financial, it's got public finance implications, it's got financial implications for the legal aid board itself, and how would they manage funding paralegals if they don't have the professionals, the same oversight as professionals, such as you've got attorneys, you've got candidate attorneys that fall under the legal aid board, as well as the professional bodies. We're going to have to look at regulating those bodies, and I agree with the sentiment that you do very good work, but we'll have to look at it. It might be premature now, because looking at a resolution or something, because obviously this is an interim process as well, so whether we'll be able to finalise that at this stage is a challenge.
Access to justice by the
uh-huh.
Court service. Any other position? I'm not going to break it.
Thank you, Chair. I do support the view that when we look at how we have crafted the coordinating of the legal practices, to what extent we can actually utilize the same way in the legal aid bill. There's a suggestion that maybe that body be the one that actually appoints two or three board members. But let's just look at how that body has been structured. Because remember, we've seen as university teachers and other establishments where they are lawyers. But look at it first to see whether you can actually manage to shift it from there and put it in the legal aid. Or maybe the decision would be to utilize the structure to appoint. Because indeed, the concern that there shouldn't come a stage where the board does not have attorneys and advocates should be something that we need to guard against. And then in terms of the of paralegals, you know, we've been talking to and fro about paralegals as to where to actually put them, how we're going to make any suitable arrangement for them, taking consideration the good work that they are doing, especially in terms of working closer to the issues in protection of their rights. And I think this is the time now, but it's just important to actually look at how to regulate paralegal services in South Africa. They have an umbrella body, and maybe we need to start looking at an umbrella body to look at how we can actually help that body to a body that manages to regulate the paralegal services in South Africa, which will take into consideration also the type of skills that would actually qualify somebody to become a paralegal. We should therefore mean that there's so many exercises they need to enter into to come to a stage that somebody has a certificate that will qualify them to become a paralegal. But I think this is the either right point where we need to actually give a close look to the issue of paralegal. Mention was actually also made of nomination of a judge as a chairperson of the board by Chief Justice. And then there's this whole thing of the consultation or after consultation. No, I don't just need it like that. The chairperson of the board will be nominated by the Chief Justice. Otherwise, they complicate unnecessarily. Thank you.
Okay, well, you excuse us when you indicated in this question, you know, so far, Mr. Trump, not a walk up door.
I want to say something, and unless there's a number one, she's coming in the subject. You see, for instance, the orientation of the to favor the establishment. Now the requirement is that you need someone with community knowledge. But we never say people with community knowledge are even drawn from the paradigm to be put there. We are expecting an advocate and a lawyer specializing in common industrial and English law to represent the community. So I think that we are very biased towards the Western thing. So I want to say we should also put on the agenda that the public interest legal practice, which would include the paralegal, would be represented if we put the lawyer in the agenda. But lastly, I think we agree that the regulation method, but also training. There have been training programs of paralegal from the state. So it's not something that should be invented or be used as an excuse to delay the recognition of paralegal.
Thank you, sir. I've taken note of the comments that have been raised so far. Let's share just on you said that the definition of legal aid. I would just like to refer you to that. I'm not saying that that's the all and end all, but it is, of course, three objects of legal aid. South Africa are to render or make available legal aid, legal advice, and to provide legal representation. So there are three sort of aspects. Our comments are based on the premise that the board is just reshaping the entity, but the committee is going to talk about the other aspects as well and understand that, and you'll get into the considerations on that. So I won't take that any further. So just to remind members that paralegals, yes, they play an incredible role, an important role. And I think you might remember, and some of the committee members might remember, when we dealt with the legal practice law, one of the earlier drafts of the legal practice law included a chapter on paralegals in the regulation. And it was agreed that that would be on hold for 80 days, so, but they do need to be regulated, and I can't agree with you more. But I wonder whether they should be regulated. My suggestion is that they should be regulated either in the legal practice law by adding a chapter or by coming up with a separate piece of legislation. Just on the issue of the national forum on legal profession in terms of the legal practice law, that is a possibility that one can look at. Law 96 of the legal practice law constitutes that national forum, which will have a lifespan of 3 years, and that might assist in the area in the immediate future. But that forum consists of, I think it's important that members should say that it consists of 16 legal practitioners, 8 of whom are attorneys, and they're designated by the Law Society of South Africa, 2 which must come from the BLA, 2 must come from Nadel, 1 from each of the statutory, the 4 statutory law societies. Then as far as the advocates are concerned, there's 5 advocates in that body designated by the GCD. There's 1 advocate designated by the National Bar Council of South Africa. There's 1 advocate designated by the National Forum of Advocates. There's 1 advocate from designated by advocates for transformation. So there are 8 advocates and there are 8 attorneys. And if that's indeed a speed set with the different advocate organizations, GCP, National Bar Council, National Forum of Advocates, Advocates for Transformation. Then that National Forum also consists of 1 teacher of law, 2 persons designated by the Minister, 1 person designated by Legal Aid South Africa, and 1 person designated by the Attorney's Deputy by the Court. That is to bring to members to recall that.
You raise the possibility, which is a good suggestion, but the problem is, if you look at the coalition, they are going to internal struggles of whether the reps come from the attorney, do they come from the attorney, and whether they come from DNA, or they come from Nadel, if they come from advocate, whether they come from advocate for transformation. So they're going to have another terrain struggle there. But I'm leaving to you, because that was your proposal. But I had a discussion with the gentleman that maybe in parallel it could be advisable just to have a separate legislation. But to see, although if we agree on it, there is still a need to craft a legal aid. I can imagine that it may be available to parliament, however it may be. Any questions?
I just want to go back to my position in terms of structure. To say it's not happening soon, because we just wanted to refresh our memories as to what is the provision in the legal aid that is built. So we can actually help to inform the clause that we want to actually transfer the legal aid with. And indeed, I do support the idea that maybe we should have a separate bill altogether for paralegal. And at the same time, we think the legal aid bill make a provision that will actually make funding available to paralegal.
Thank you, Jonathan. I wasn't going to talk because I think you covered me in a lot of the points. But I think because we sit as a committee, it's important for you as a chairperson in many shares of this to know that the people that you are speaking on behalf in support. And I think I support what you are saying in terms of the paralegal, you say that we cannot continue to propose the bill. You know, because our people out there do need the support. And as for me, NICO is the nearest to them, so we have to use the community paralegal because at the classroom level, that's what you need more than they need the professional lawyer. So I am quite in support of you.
Just to support Chair on our argument that the representation on the legal aid, other than the fact that, as I mentioned earlier, that the legal aid members either KCMs or the PM are all under the auspices of the Business Law Society, included in the bill is obviously the fact that duty care can be handled by private practitioners. So I think that's the turn of the book. But the further aspect that we must look at and say, well, if duty care, that is private nurse, are getting work or certain work, even if it's only limited from the legal aid board in certain circumstances, then surely there is a further argument to the court to have some form of a duty care representation on the court. You quite correctly point out, Chair, that I think there mustn't be this division anymore between BLA and Nardell and what we call the statute. I personally have always thought that the standards are unified in the law. And there was a very good reason why you had BLA and Nardell. But I think maybe we need to move on beyond that. But the law societies do have various percentages of BLA and Nardell in the so-called statutory group. And I don't like using that word. That's a group of voted on. BLA and Nardell are not actually voted on the law societies. They are nominated by their organizations to be on various law societies councils, dealing with law societies of Africa. Others are attorneys who are voted on by their members, and they may be from all kinds of different backgrounds as it were. So the law society, I feel, needs to be told we don't want all these different groups. Get your house in order. If there is that concern that there are these different groupings. But the law societies do have one council at its A level, which has DLA Nobel and the so-called elected or statutory group, and so the provincial societies also have that. So whoever is nominated onto any particular board, is there on behalf of the Law Society of South Africa, or CAPE, or KwaZulu, or Free State, or wherever, Northern Province Law Society, representing that body, not representing DLA Nadal and even other groups, representing all attorneys which fall under LSFA or the various statutory law societies, but not statutory, various provincial law societies. So it's not
somebody going there and arguing for one particular from the other, very obviously awful. All the terms. I think that's an important point to make. And just lastly, as well, Chair, the issue of paralegals, if they can't be included in the legal practice book, then there needs to be some regulation, as we agreed on, I think, some form of statute which deals with training and also regulatory functions, and furthermore, involving to some extent also input from all parties, including the profession. Because I think having paralegals not only in your law practice, but also as far as NICRO and any other community-based organization is very, very important. I will never forget many years ago when I was studying at the University of Cape Town. We started the very first legal aid group at the University of Cape Town. We would then go out into areas to provide legal service. So as students, we go out there providing free legal service, but we incorporated that with the attorney profession, who go out and also give free legal assistance. So if you have a situation there in a particular area, a paralegal organization, that should also engage with the profession, and that professionals will give free time and free advice to that organization to make sure that it is at all times looking after the interests of the citizens of the society. And I think that's very important. So there has to be some form of structure. Maybe it would have been easier to include it in the legal aid bill, but I think that's gone on for now 12 years. Maybe we could have been operating some other form of legislation.
Thank you, Chair. I think that the need to the regulars can be done to train, but we don't want to do all that illegally. We should try for the legal aid bill to make provision making it fun and available to the public and so forth, that's that to be on the future. But you know, another point I want to make is this practice that legal aid startup will employ in-house nursing. I think that is not
good.
Because what is going to happen there? If the legal aid of the care officers are likely in the LSN, the younger people who want to go to practice in the rural area where they will be available to ask for it, cannot operate there because they won't have access to funding. And the people in the rural area are poor, they can't pay them. And all lawyers are going to cost to the position where you have the legal aid provider operation. I just think that our approach today doesn't very great in mind the ordinary people in the world. I think when Australia is a big one, in the first world country, I don't know.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, your concern is noted about placing too many attorneys in different areas or candidate attorneys in different areas. It's not my concern here that we are dealing with the bill, but it's as if we don't actually change this concession. There are other provisions that we've got, for example, in the legal practice bill. You know, there's going to be this clause in the legal practice bill, and I think it must talk to legal aid. And then it will address the concerns that the chair is actually raising. If we actually follow that route, then the minister, but I don't know whether it would actually go to that or not. To look at it, take into consideration the concerns that have been raised, and see how you can lend money to vary the provision of the legal aid bill with a clause on community status in the legal practice.
Thank you for taking us forward.
Chief, thank you. I want to
reiterate the point that I made at the last meeting with regard to stakeholder representation. I must stress that the issues that are being raised previously comes to ABA South Africa, because as we explained, the nature of boards, whether they're now public entities or private entities, is that they're no longer stakeholder based. So whether the professions are still making representation on the basis of that being good governance or in fact that's not good governance. Good governance in terms of TNC is now talking about parallel engagement with stakeholders, while boards being closely separate from stakeholders representing the interests of that organization. And the issue of them having the broad skills is very important. And I think that to say that we won't have lawyers or advocates on the board, I don't know whether it makes sense, because then you're saying our minister, who is entrusted with setting up the board, won't do that. And why would the minister not set up a board in that way? Because in the end, the board doesn't set up a board, the minister sets it up. So they set up authority of government, who is actually the in charge of the public entity, who will set up this board and will take into account the broad base interest. So if we want to have also, for example, the skills of people who have an understanding of public interest law, then we must record that as skills to be included. But we cannot record sectors, because then we're taking the project backwards. And that when we have issues that are discussed, like even was said by the representatives of the Law Society in this group, that then the judiciary people can be represented. No one is represented on the board. In fact, what you have is that the interests of the organizations have to be represented by that board. If the judiciary, if the Law Society of South Africa, if the GCP, anybody wants their interests represented, then they need to engage the board to say, these are our interests, this is how we need to take code and can you consider this matter. If they want issues related to regulatory matters taken forward, then we have that relationship, because we have to register candidates for attorneys in the same way as any other private law firm, and we are bound by the same thing, as well as the fact that our lawyers individually have to be bound by the code of their statutory body. So there's a basic difference between a statutory council, which is a regulatory body, it's not in charge of any public entity, it's a regulatory body, and legally in South Africa, the board of it, which will be in charge of this public entity, which will dispense legal aid in a way that is determined in terms of the mandate provided by government. So I think that I want to stress that, and I'm very happy to debate it, but I think that the board, the current board of legal aid South Africa, has discussed this and feels wrongly and would like that representation. I think in terms of moving forward to a second point, the issue of the footprint that you wanted me to clarify, Chairperson, I must assure you that we have a footprint across the country. And at every court, I think we did explain at the last meeting that we have a presence at every court in the country, primarily through our offices, but also through a partnership, either with agency firms, which is private firms, or with corporation firms. And so in that way, we do cover the court. So we have a footprint that covers the court footprint of the country. Where we have a gap is definitely in terms of skills, assistance in rural areas. And that is a reality, not because we don't want to have a footprint, it's a reality because of the financial constraints. And if we had more money, we would be able to do that and be able to provide that service. So how do we then do it? We expand our service through that engagement and network and community outreach that we did, and we have in a structured way where we link to all the right offices linked to what used to be that power and now is the Association of Advice Offices. We have a formal structure. And we work with them closely, and we link every of our justice centers to all the advice offices in their region. And in that way, we're covering all the areas that they cover. And that is how we extend our reach. If we are provided with more funding, we can extend our footprint, no problem. But we know that, especially in the period of recession, there isn't additional funding. So we have to look at ways in which we create partnerships and in that way expand our footprint. And I think that's what we do. Secondly, and we also explained that related to the footprint secondly, is that because of the fact that often people can't travel, even in rural areas, even if you have it at, let's say, a central village, people can't always travel, and travel costs in themselves are expensive. What is the most expensive coverage in South Africa is telecom. So therefore, can we set up is a coordinator where we provide first level advice to anybody who calls us in different languages that we explain, and linking to that advice, if they need legal assistance, then we link them to a justice center. So that is the footprint in which we cover both criminal and civil.
You have a relationship with the nation, and the relationship with the weakness. The money
processes.
The money still will go to legal position, and you don't associate with the advisor without giving the money. And that way they imbalance. But the community public is attracted to the economic system on a virtual basis within the mainstream practice. And I say that is disadvantageous to the
No, we just worried about the provisions from the GIG report. That actually says that the board can actually be established running parallel with the stakeholders, not participating in the board, and we just want it. It just doesn't sound correct. Because whatever mandate you bought in terms of whatever you established as intention to provide service for the public, will have to do with the stakeholders. Now, how does my administration come from something and then say, I am representing you, but I can't be in the position to run parallel with you, without you being represented on this service of trust that is supposed to be sending you? So it feels like there is something that is wrong. And indeed, we do appreciate your information, say, for the footprint in all the courts, which is good. And then you indicate that you also provide services and where it needs and you have to send an attorney. But you have to come up with a mechanism and system that is actually convinces that it's going to be workable and affordable. Because sometimes they come up with systems, especially when you actually also bring in the component of civil cases. We shouldn't actually find ourselves in a situation where we actually run a service that is not affordable. And after this whole issue of affordability, what I actually brought up the other day, because whatever we do, we need to actually look at a service that will never ever reach to a point of a crisis because of the manner in which we actually made a provision for. And just another clarity, you talk about the justice centers, I'm not so clear, I'm aware of the justice centers. How many do we have? Because normally we make a sense to the apply purposes. If you can just give us information as to how many justice centers is what the allocation.
That's all the question of justice. Maybe we need a map which indicates where are these people located. But certainly I still maintain that those justice centers, they are opposed to the wilderness, which does not factor in the public interest law practice on which the majority of the people depend. So we may think that we are transforming a modern workable real system and find that we have left the people behind. And that's when you find one to do process. The independent clinic was driving the cost because it doesn't have a meaning. So we clearly have to put people first. And I think that's the policy of that is going to happen. And also, I think we clearly also need even when we come up with a new decision on parameters, we must talk to those people and not talk on them. Maybe organize a national workshop, summit, bring them. Let's hear how you try to make it. Otherwise, this top down approach is not going to assist them.
Here, in terms of the footprint, I think the justice centers are what we call our local offices, rather are what we call our justice centers. There are 64 justice centers at the moment in the country, plus linking to that, we have 64 satellite offices. So actual offices across the country, we have 128. We have provided that with the location in the past, and we will provide it now when we do our annual report briefing, and it's in the annual report, and every office is listed in there. As far as the issue of stakeholders and engagement is concerned, Chair, if I may clarify, the point about stakeholders, I hope I'm not being misunderstood. The issue is not that we mustn't take into account what stakeholders are saying. There's a very structured way in which we have to take into account, and we even report on it in our annual report, which comes to Parliament and to the Minister. So there is a structured way, and that is where one can engage and regulate that and say, okay, is that enough or not? But the only difference is that that's where different stakeholders, whether they are the profession or as the chairperson said, what about the interests of the community, how do they get represented on the board, or any other NGOs and CBOs that are representing communities or involved in public interest or in community advice services also, they all are not represented on the board. But through our stakeholder engagement at local, provincial and national level, we engage them to understand their needs, and then we have to respond to their needs. And if we don't respond to their needs, that's when we'll get complaints as government and say, but this is an illegal aid entity you set up, and what are they doing? And that's how we'll mediate that and say, okay, now what about that? Why don't you change to that? So that is where they've drawn distinction, and let's separate that whole area of stakeholders, but stakeholders being very important, especially as even in the private sector, they move forward on the issues of sustainability. They say that the involvement of communities and the impact that any work has on communities has to be taken into account and factored in. And therefore, stakeholder engagement is very much a part of a response, but also a part of a report. So you not only must be involved with stakeholders, but you must also report on it so it can be seen to be there. And then separately from that, the board has the responsibility to make sure that the organization's mandate, remember the mandate is not something the board says, as I said, the mandate comes from government. So that mandate has to be fulfilled, and then the board is accountable, both to government, to the minister, as well as to Parliament directly, in terms of the PFMA, as well as the act to say, this is how it fulfills its mandate or not. And so that's the distinction on the board.
If you exist, the stakeholders are not represented. Even if you engage a proxy, at the end, you can still take the decision and say, I've consulted, because the question is after consulting, is the decision taken in consultation or after consultation? Mm-hmm. And I guess it will be after consultation. But even if you ignore them, as long as you mean it, that you reach their top. So it's not enough just to say the structured way of engaging, because also those stakeholders, you are beneficiaries. Now, in that beneficiary, there's a question of accountability. Now, how does that accountability affect them? So I think that's a question of
Chair, sorry, let me belabor the point of representation. But as I understand the approach of Legal Aid South Africa, is that the minister would then be appointed, well, we know the minister can appoint, and therefore the minister feels it's appropriate to appoint an attorney or an advocate to the board. But if we read the bill, Section 6 talks about the board consists of 14 voting members appointed by the minister, right? 8 members who collectively have the skills referred to in Section 7, bracket D. Section 7, bracket D sets it out, business management, information technology, and then it says legal services. Now, what does legal services mean? Does that mean the minister can appoint somebody who is on the board of NICRA, but they also, to an extent, may have legal services, or on the board of some paralegal organization, or an attorney, or an advocate? If the argument is, well, the minister is in charge, and he or she is going to be saying, well, we want the board comprised of following stakeholders, attorneys, because they play a
a role in all of this, a very, very big role. And then you look at the definition and that legal service, does that include attorneys or include other people who provide legal services? So there is some uncertainty in respect of the definition aspect. So I think that needs to also be looked at. Because the minister can say, well, you know, legal services doesn't necessarily have to be an attorney or an advocate.
Okay.
So
the number of documents, we make clear that legal services or legal assistance also include social workers, paralegal, so legal aid should you know, be raised or older. You know, when you say legal services, conventionally people will exclude legal assistance, legal services, and the bastard of their success. But you see, another thing that we must bear in mind is that we are saying this is the people's census and the people's driven process. So we don't want to establish some structure that we have an agent to be everybody on that. The people must participate, they must hold those structures accountable. I think we have the same problem that way for you, you are doing things outside of the country. There is no mechanism of them getting the last figure where it was a council. It may not answer the situation to a 2% challenge. But can we leave it there and just say that we have the rule with enough information to really get the question. But I think we'll be happy that this is the question.
My question was just to get an idea and for us to really engage in the whole issue of whether it's our article, the participation, who is actually funded. We've also been checked the things like how do you determine this? At what point do you decide that a particular entity to an individual will be represented by the Great South Africa in the civil net? And you take give examples of the change of that you've actually funded. And of course, the change is in reference to numbers, you can also include the numbers that are changed. A question, I think in the last financial year, 2013-14, you did, in terms of the legal matters, excluding legal advice. Legal advice, you did about 300,000. I don't have the exact figures here, but I can, if I can just help you find it in the meantime. So roughly, close on to 300,000 advice, but of legal matters, close on to 500,000. As the chairperson correctly said, only 13% of those are civil matters. Now, I think we need to understand the historical context of it. When HELCOM was legal in South Africa in the late 1990s, when government reconsidered the entire system of legal aid, at that point, we then decided that it should continue with legal aid, but continue with it only in terms of that which was necessary. And it's defined necessary at that stage, I might say, as that which was required by the Constitution and by the courts, which is primarily criminal. And I think I was trying to see who were here in those 10 years, and I think Carol was there, and she can help me and confirm what I'm saying. In those early years when we actually came to the portfolio committee, we were getting asked the question the other way around. We were saying, please, honorable members, we want to do civil work, and they were saying, no, you're not allowed to do civil work. So I just wanted to remind committee that that was the reality, and that was because they felt that government didn't have the money and it wasn't being managed. It's talking specifically in terms of Section 35 in legal representation at state expense. At only time talks about legal representation at state expense in trials where they are accused and with accused and detained persons. So that's why the focus was on criminal, and that's where courts could hold us to account and order us not to provide legal aid to a criminal matter. So that's where the whole plan happened. Okay. And what we did is we tried to promote, once we as Legal Aid South Africa, tried to promote that if we take a broader reading of Section 34 and also the transformative nature of the Bill of Rights of the Constitution, that we should actually be providing some legal aid as well, because that is a big need in terms of our community's access to justice. And we can provide you with some of that early documents that we did. It's only then as recently as the late 2000s, that we started getting support to say that no, it's fine, the committee supports this, and that we actually would support you getting more funding on it. So up to then, in fact, that is why you see that prior that was even less than 13% our involvement. We were doing it, but we weren't doing it as much as we would have liked to. And we've then grown it significantly, and every year when we request funds, additional funds in terms of the medium-term expenditure framework, we always include some because we say there's a demand and we need to do it. So we're doing civil in two ways. We're doing civil, as you said, legal assistance is not only about lawyers helping, it's also about advice. So we're doing it in advice with the 300,000 matters. But in terms of lawyer assisted civil work, it's in about 40,000 matters. And in that case, in trying to grow it, we've only been successful to the extent that. Now the question before committee and in fact before the minister is whether you want to change that split, that proportion, because it's really not if you want to change that proportion.
Can I just maybe what you need to do is just to give us an idea as to who qualifies, because now, even before we decide as to whether we want to really support fullness of the idea of you funding civil matters, just to give an example, what are the type of civil matters that you are now providing legal services for, and how do you determine who to ask this? Give us just an example so that you know you give us an idea as to how it will then make sense that the state should actually provide legal services for such matters. Because remember, here it's just about access. Legal aid for Africa is about access to justice. The state wanting to ensure that anyone who's got to be faced with a situation where they've got to defend themselves in a court of law, and that will actually be done in a fair manner. So basically, when it comes to civil matters, it's a whole different dimension, but it needs to actually then go back to their main object of what legal aid perhaps we can go down to.
Section 34 talks about access to property. And it says everyone has the right to have any dispute that can be resolved by the application of law decided in a fair public hearing before a court of law, where appropriate, another independent and impartial tribunal or forum. Now, this section would justify the inclusion of civil cases on an equal basis with the criminal. But you see, Section 35 refers to arrested, detained, and accused persons. And you can understand why the question will go into detention. Because we come from a apartheid where people are just arrested, abusively detained, and denied access to lawyer, but that emphasis cannot exclude exception, the provisions of Section 34, and therefore exclusion. And we can't say the department look at the budget because they don't have money, they felt that civil laws cases should not be here. Because that we have to take our cue from the policy, not from the budget. So if we have done somewhere to improve civil cases, I think we should look into that way and see how we create the balance. Because you see, the quickest way of delegitimizing our constitution and the law is when ordinary people who are the majority and who are victims of the criminal see the whole media system serving the criminal. Then we are going to have a problem. And people then taking the law into their own hands. So we don't want that situation to develop.
And Chair, I agree with you. What you're saying is exactly what we argued before the CA committee in the past, that because of those aspects of the constitution, we should be in civil work. Having said that, I think that even when we engage with stakeholders, it's clear that the main gap that we have is to do more civil work, and as well also, as you've seen in terms of representation made by NGOs. In terms of the kind of civil matters we do, if I may answer that question, I first want to explain that as far as Section 28 is concerned, in terms of children's matters, we do all children's matters, whether they're criminal or civil. So firstly, civil matters relate to children, all civil matters relate to children, whatever they may be. We do use a means test, I should have said that at the start, it's the same means test for both criminal and civil. And that means that it's spelled out in the legal aid guide, which, as you said, goes to the minister and is approved by the minister and ratified by Parliament. And that in terms of the types of matters, we do all children's matters. We assist in matters related to evictions, in terms of matters related to both in terms of housing matters, EFTA, and high-related matters. We also assist in matters, in labor matters. We have labor court, PA, that is only at the labor court level, because the CCMA was set up specifically as a non-legal representation kind of entity. So we only assist at the labor court level, so we do assist in labor matters. And we also then assist in any other matters as we have capacity, and except for those matters that are specifically excluded in the legal aid guide. At the moment, we are also assisting, for example, in children, where children are involved in a case, and we have a special project with the master's office for those estates that are less than 125,000. So we are assisting in all of those kind of matters as well. And we have a direct link with the master's office and the assist. So the ones that are specifically excluded, one example of that would be a matter where there are civil matters which link into the claim of rule. Because we say that in those instances, they can actually work with private lawyers, and that the private lawyers can do it on a contingency fee basis linked to the provisions of the relevant legislation. And so in those instances, we don't provide assistance. So essentially what I'm saying is there are a few excluded matters and listed in the right, but other than that, we can assist with most of it. We also assist a lot. In fact, the bulk of our matters are family-related matters, linking to divorces, etc. And so that's the extent of it. I'm not sure if I can add anything else to help you get clarity.
Any civil matter that you've ever dealt with against the state?
I'm not even to know which civil matters we dealt with. It's possible that we would have had civil matters relating to impact services. The other lady talked about impact services, which where we have precedent setting legislation or class action kind of matters. But I'm just going to ask the bank to find it, and I can give you an example.
Can we do
some practice?
I think we should finish at the time. But the next Tuesday, Wednesday, the department will be here. Then I think that you come with lots of information. You can use the internet to read the app and engage further next year. And then if you now prepare for the department to finish the presentation.
the summary document. We put the last at clause 6, if I may move on to clause 7, relays South Africa, and clause 7 deals with qualifications for membership of the board, and sets out what the qualifications are for the proper person of South African citizen, collectively broadly representative of the diversity of South African population, collectively has skills which include, and we've already been through those this morning, and not have been fixed. What Legal Aid South Africa is suggesting is that the grounds for this qualification is provided when Section 9 the company is actually incorporated into Clause 7. It might be a good idea. My colleague has concluded the provisions of Section 69 the company act that will manage to do this document, and I can just go quickly. That's on page 15 of the document that he's working with. And if you go to subsection 8 of Section 69, let me go through it quickly. A person is disqualified from being a member of a company or a director of a company if the court has permitted that person to be a director or declared the person to be delinquent in terms of Section 162 or in terms of 47 of the Close Corporations Act, or subject to subsections 9 to 12, the person is an unrehabilitated solvent, which we also have in our board, is prohibited in terms of any public regulation to be a director of the company, which is something new, we don't have, has been removed from an office of trust on the grounds of misconduct involving dishonesty, we don't really have that in those terms, and then has been convicted in the Republic or elsewhere in prison without the option of a fine or fine more than the prescribed amount for theft, fraud, forgery, perjury, or an offence involving fraud, misrepresentation, or dishonesty in connection with the promotion, formation, or management of a company, or in connection with any act contemplated in subsections 2, or under this act, as the Companies Act, or the Solvency Act, the Close Corporation Act, Financial Intelligence Centre Act, and so on. So there are some aspects in this Companies Act which aren't in our provision, so it might be worthwhile looking at those, Chair, and including them in our provision. I don't know, as I said, that the provision that we use in the legal practice bill, that could also be looked at. I don't know if there's anyone wants to talk about it. I think that came out of briefing. Some of the members raised when we briefed the committee on the bill. Some of the members referred to what we did in the legal practice bill. So there are aspects in the Companies Act that we could include in there, and aspects that we have in the legal practice bill that we could include in Clause 7 for the committee's consideration. That's how I ask the judges to remind members of what we did in the legal practice bill.
Thank you, Chair. We will present it in writing also for the convenience. The legal practice bill wording is that the person might not be unrehabilitated insolvent, not be declared of unsound mind, and not be convicted in a court of fifth instance of an offence intended for more than 12 months of imprisonment with the option of a fine, or of an offence which involves any element of honesty. Another wording that we will also present for the committee's consideration is of the Constitution that states that a person may not be unrehabilitated insolvent, may not be declared of unsound mind, and also then a provision about an offence as being of more than 12 months imprisonment.
Sorry, Chair. What is good about the, or useful about the Companies Act provisions is that this has been removed from the Office of Trust, I think, and or has been prohibited to be a director of the company. I think those aspects which be included in our provision. And we can come up with various options when we need it. Okay. Thanks, Chair. Clause 8.1 chairperson and deputy chairperson, that's what this clause deals with, and the Cape Bar Council and the Law Society of South Africa question the requirement that the minister must designate a deputy chairperson, and whether the board shouldn't be able to elect its own deputy chairperson. I think this is a came up in the deliberations on the legal practice score. Chair, we've got it in the bill that the minister must do so, and we feel that is the right way to go. But what the Havels have done, we've tried to highlight in Annexure C, which we've made available together with this document, on the situation in other pieces of legislation, how the deputy chairpersons of the various bodies and institutions are appointed. And if I recall correctly, I asked the judge to help me, that most of the legislation in question that we've looked at, the minister plays a role in the appointment of the deputy chairperson as well.
Mm-hmm.
We go on to clause 9, and clause 9 deals with term appointment and Legal Aid South Africa points out because clause 9 says the chairperson and deputy chairperson and the director of the board hold office for a term of not less than 3 years, not more than 5 years, as determined by the minister at the time of appointment, can may be appointed for one additional term only. And that's the question that Legal Aid South Africa is asking, why should it be limited? We had similar debates in regard to the legal practice score, and we have also included information in Annexure B, which is attached to our document we're discussing, of what other legislation looks like. Some acts provide for a number of reappointments and some do not. Legal Aid South Africa is of the view that principles of good governance do not require that the term of directors should be fixed. The requirement for continuity and succession planning does not limit the number of reappointments. Chair, as a department, we don't have any strong view on either side. Legislation seems to vary. Maybe this is something that the committee could consider. I think in one of our earlier versions of our Legal Aid Bill, we didn't have that restriction. And I've got a feeling that we'll find this might have put us in. And as I say, we don't have strong views, and I really think this is something that we would seek guidance from the portfolio committee. Bear in mind what Legal Aid has suggested.
What people generally think,
you
can address them with your
general practice is extension of one thing. And I think corporate governance actually boosts up what they do. It's avoiding people really being in office to a point where the office owners feel like they own it there. So, extension of unpaid is what's normal. If you look at also chapter 9, for example, and you look at the term of office, the commission is extended only one term.
Yeah, but I'm looking at a situation where you've got a very good job and everybody knows that that person is difficult to get. You know, he's so good and you want to try somebody else after, say, maybe 10 years. Why can't you say not limited or at least to 3 years if you have to limit? Instead of saying so that it gives a chance for the people to decide whether they still want that person or not, the board decides of that person not still, I'm sorry, whether whoever appoints the board wants second or third term. I mean, why should you do so in the second limit?
That's why I asked the question, what is the general question? And one of the objectives, the general question is not more than 2 cents. Because sometimes we do allow people to stay longer in one position, we even open up them up for corruption. Because they feel at home now to own this thing indefinitely. Many of them can have. And also, I think we're a dynamic society now where today you have other factions of society not killed, they don't find time. So as we go forward, we need to be able to bring new blood. I don't know. But I, I think also that the legal report, I hope no one to come across it wanting to create jobs for a friend.
The conflict of interest.
The conflict of interest. The conflict of interest.
I think all our board members are appointed by the minister, so we can't be talking about ourselves. The minister does have a role. I think just to clarify what the actually is that in fact it's not democratic. So the words of the acts of government themselves are different. So there are some votes, some acts rather that have that practice and some that don't. As we queried specifically, and that's why we raised it in this way, we queried it specifically in relation to Kingsley, which is the code on good governance, and the code was quite clear that it doesn't limit. But what it does raise is the issue is that after a certain period, the independence has to be looked at. So, and if the person person's independent, I'm talking about my board level, the board member's independence has to be looked at, it relates specifically to their involvement in, as an example, the audit committee. Because in the audit committee, specifically, the code is quite clear that one shouldn't have those who are not independent. So what happened at that point that you raised about when you're in an organization for long, you get too close to organizations, then can you really assess? And I think that the issue of skills, experience, and institutional memory of the organization has to be balanced with that notion of independence, and that's why they then say, you can play a role, and even again, in all companies they do have that, but only thing you can't, they play certain roles, for example, be a member of the company.
Follow the proposal by another member, which I think can take away the rights of the not for attending after attending. So, which is no harm to be done. If the person is not good, the minister will say, after attending, not the person. But if it's a good, good test, the minister will say, you know, also work on it. But I think that check can be done. And we hear them.
Yourself changes indicated the society is evolving. So yes, some of you say we should change, and that doesn't necessarily mean that the person is the group ever the Barakita will have. And it naturally then puts the responsibility on us who are supposed to be good to know how to transfer skills. You can't be good alone for 10 years. You have to develop other people and be able to take over the work that you're doing. And I think sometimes we need to come up with laws that make it easy for minister. See, if we not wait for it, it is still that what we are deciding on is affecting in 1-10. And you, the whole issue about whether this is in line with corporate governance is debatable if it goes beyond 1-10. And 1-10 is about 5 years. So you're talking about somebody who's supposed to serve for 10 years, and this person who see that ourselves, this person who's not maybe 35 who's serving for 10 years, and something just doesn't sound right. So, and you talk about institutional memory, it's not a problem, institutional memory. And we can even look at staggering appointments, because that's where the problem might be. We find that you have a group of people who come in and they all go away at the same time. So if you stagger the appointments, it's actually helping us recover. So we don't actually find ourselves held ransom by institutional memory. We develop a system legislatively they could actually take care of that. But my support is to actually look at it from the perspective of ensuring that you don't have people overstaying in offices. And sometimes this is a result of institutions where you find that, you know, there's no growth. Things are just at the same still because you don't bring in new blood. New blood is always good. Can you imagine this?
Because if some people can be deputies for 20 years, source of it.
Yes, just sorry, one point, I know we're being short of time. I think the public perception is also important. And you may have a period of up to 10 years, that is quite a significant period that the person can be appointed. And yes, that person may be particularly good, but there are many people out there also particularly good. And I think it is wrong to have somebody in a position for too long. I think whether we look at legislation or not, let's just look at it from a common sense point of view. And I think, and from public perspective, that a maximum of up to 10 years, I think that is quite a significant area. Thank you.
No, I don't like to have a restrictive legislation. We are talking about the discretion of a minister. So I think the minister should know. Why can't the minister decide on either of? Why must he say it is 10 years and you very under no circumstances can you reappoint him? Is that what it is? If so, why should we not trust the minister that the minister will have a discretion after 10 years for whatever reason?
We move on to clause 9, clause 10, sorry, clause 10 1. Clause 10 gives the determination of the membership of the board or members of the board, and Legal Aid South Africa suggests the member's term of office terminates automatically upon the expiry of the term of office unless such membership is renewed before the expiry of the previous term, is similar to what even the Companies Act, the department would seek to agree with this. I think it makes sense. I'm going to move on to clause 15, the rules and committees of the board, and the Commission for Gender Equality suggests that 50% of committee members must be women. See, I'm not going to go into details, but in, earlier in this document we referred back to provision in the practice law, which could be considered the need for any committee to reflect the racial and gender composition of South Africa must, as far as practical, be considered when the committee is established. That is just a possibility for the committee to have. May I continue, Chair? Okay, and then we get to clause 15. That the appointment of a CEO, an advocate by Zella, says that the CEO should be legally qualified. The department does not agree with that. If I may go through our response quickly, the ultimate responsibility for the management of an organization vests in the CEO. He is also responsible for developing and recommending to the board a sustainable long-term strategy for the organization. The emphasis on the qualification is overall management skills rather than the technical skills related to the core business of the organization. The CEO is usually responsible for the administration of organizations. Clause 15 requires the CEO to be a fit and proper and has a capable knowledge and experience. This is considered reading of the department to be appropriate. And this wording is similar to other legislation where a CEO has been appointed, and we can refer back to recent legislation for the CEO in terms of the Protection of Personal Information Act. The CEO says that advocate my fellowship not be able to get appointed indefinitely, and again, okay. We are at the limitation as we discuss in clause 9, whether it should be open or whether it should be limited. Should a CEO be able to be appointed, and I'm not sure how the committee wants to deal with that, maybe speak on that as well as you suggested with clause 9. My fellow is also saying in respect of clause 71B, and clause 71B says that the chief executive officer must have consultation with the board, appoint as many senior employees, and B, appoint as many other employees and agents as may be necessary. My fellow is saying that there might be a problem that because agents are employees of the department, if you have a look at the definition talking to one, and that is true. The department proposes that the word and agents in paragraph subparagraph E be deleted and a new subparagraph E be inserted to recognize that the board may designate agents in conjunction with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. Now, proceed, Clause 17.1. The Commission for Gender Equality suggests that the TA should consider Section 172 of the Constitution in this appointment. It is accepted that the Gender Commission is referring to Section 174.2 and not 172.2 and Section 174.2 is the 174.2 of the Constitution, which deals with judicial offices. These as well as the need for the judiciary to reflect broadly the racial and gender composition of South Africa must be considered when judicial officers are appointed. This is similar to what we have done in the legal practice bill, which I have already alluded to. So that is up for the committee's consideration. Clause 19, the Cape Cod Council supports this clause. That relates to the provision of legal aid by direction of court in criminal matters. And in clause 22.1, that clause 19, clause 19 deals with petition of client privilege in certain circumstances. That's clause 19. The Cape Bar Council really reflects its support for the clause. And then with your permission. No, Chair, I made a mistake by referring to clause 22. I was referring to clause 19. That Cape Bar Council, of course. We now move on to clause 22. Clause 22 deals with provision of legal aid by direction of courts in criminal matters. Now, I'd ask Ms. Lowe to take over from here.
Thank you, Chairperson. Regarding clause 22.1b, the Cape Bar Council and the LSSA have similar comments. 22.1b provides that the court in criminal proceedings may only direct that the person be provided with legal representation state things if the court has, subject to subsection 3, it is certain that together with any report, the court may consider necessary for the attention of legal aid South Africa for evaluation and report by legal aid South Africa, and legal aid South Africa has made the recommendation that the person qualifies for legal representation. This is quite a technical clause. The comment was that the clause creates the impression that a court may only direct legal aid South Africa to render services if legal aid South Africa has in fact already recommended. And a negative wording for this clause is proposed to read at the end that a certain court is deleted, as you indicated. It will then read subject to section 23, the certain matter together with any court report may consider necessary for the attention of legal aid South Africa for evaluation and report, and has received and considered such report from legal aid South Africa. And all alternatively that the word that be replaced by whether. And our response is that the clause is only applicable in criminal matter where legal aid has been refused, and that the wording should actually be amended as this direction is afforded where legal aid has in fact been refused. So our departmental response is that we would appreciate the committee to consider amending the clause.
Is the legal aid refused because they don't have resources? And then the court direction to provide the evidence. What does that mean? Where should they go to them?
At refusal, is it legal aid refused by legal aid or officer? Or the defendant refusing to be provided with legal aid?
The defendant refused
legal aid.
Application for legal aid
has been refused.
Now we transfer them from the digital legal aid to the court and the lawyer and the lawyers of course they want money, and they will argue that the court must direct legal aid, provide legal aid, and if legal aid doesn't have money, then they will be pressed. If you put them there to take those decisions, don't you trust them that they will take the right decision?
We will agree with you, but then we in administration. The thing is that the courts have, in terms of the, I think, the Criminal Procedure Act, the right to conduct a fair trial. So, so therefore, in using that right, as the presiding officer has the right to then make certain directions in that regard, and that what we bound by. So if they order and we don't have the money, we still have to follow the order. But if we feel that they are clearly wrong, then we take another view. There are instances in which we follow this and we have to then reallocate funds. There are instances in which we have taken precise options that we do.
You substantiated the point earlier. Your concern was about affordability. I do hear what the CEO is actually saying, which is justifiable, but then always the problem would be affordability. So in this case, we actually think that we are now being open to the court instructing legal aid South Africa to provide legal assistance without really knowing as to whether there could be instances where it becomes impossible financially for you to do so.
Also, when you take the point of view, you are using the resources that should be going to the defendant now to do with you. So maybe let's keep your sheep over here. We will get a gist of that.
Thank you, Chair. The next clause is 22.3. It provides a court may only refer a matter into the subsection 1B, that is the one we just discussed, if a certain option has applied, has been refused, and has exhausted his internal right to appeal. The current Bar Council's comment was that this subclause should be deleted as it will cause unnecessary delays and duplication in criminal trial. The important response is that if courts are permitted to order legal aid where there has been no application, then this would result in a dual system of legal aid, and this would be unsustainable. Also, the requirement of internal appeals at Legal Aid South Africa aligns to the requirement of fair administrative justice. If all appeals against refusal of legal aid have been exhausted or no response is received, then a court, in terms of this clause, may refer the case for further evaluation and support to Legal Aid South Africa. After consideration of the said report, a court may then direct Legal Aid South Africa to provide legal representation. And they can also refer to a case, Legal Aid Board versus F and others. In this case, the Supreme Court of Appeals held that the court does not have the power to order the Legal Aid Board to provide a few person with two advocates each in private practice to be remunerated in accordance with the maximum rate.
Sorry, you can't agree, you can't have two advocates, that's wrong. But the chair, in practice, obviously, of course, in the court, right down to the level here, has a duty in terms of the Constitution to advise an accused person of his right to legal representation. What happens in practice, all the courts in the major areas anyway, you have somebody from even South Africa in the court. And the magistrate then says to an accused, what lawyer? He says yes, can you afford a private lawyer? He says no. Then legal aid actually then right there then we'll start filling in the form and there's a phone case for a day or two, and then the legal aid will come back and say, I've been taking the person on. We are able to be forward within the ambit of legal aid and we'll take the matter on. So one mustn't forget the court has a duty in terms of the Constitution to advise an accused that he has a right to a lawyer, and he also then can't afford a lawyer, he has a right to approach the legal aid court.
That is
referral
to the legal aid. I think that's from an order by courts ordering legal aid to provide. Because But if they just say the men can be an age, real age is weaker than us, the weaker than us available, and decide whether or not they can afford it. So the question of us for the problem is coming up. But who can do something like that? We are all there.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. So 22.4b provides that legal acts of Africa may, in any review proceeding referred to in paragraph A2, not be required to pay more than the maximum amount determined in the legal act manual in terms of section 33.1c. The Cape Ball Council proposed that a caveat be built into this clause to provide a save in the event of gross negligence or malfeasance on the part of people in South Africa or other exceptional circumstances. And the department does not agree with their comment, as a distinction must be made between legal aid adjudicated carers as provided for quality in the guidance, as well as provided for in the manual, and cost orders by court. And this clause deals with a fee payable to lawyers, and the conduct of legal aid South Africa is not related thereto. We keep that they misread the clause. And legal aid South Africa has a set tariff system, which is payable to private practitioners when they are instructed. And it is the legal aid South Africa to determine these fees and not the court. Thank you, Chief. Clause 22.6 is also a technical provision. Should I read it, Chief? It provides in determining whether any person is entitled to legal representation of state affairs, and before any court orders the provision of legal representation of state affairs, the legal applicant is the owner of showing on a balance of probabilities that he or she is unable to afford his own representation, has made a full disclosure of all relevant facts and documents pertaining to his or her inability to pay, has a lifestyle that is consistent with his or her alleged inability to afford, and has cooperated fully with any investigation conducted by Legal Aid South Africa. The Cape Bar Council proposes that the onus and the requirement to keep the negative context listed in this sub-clause is counter to the constitutional rights and be open to challenge. This sub-clause should be deleted and replaced by provision that Legal Aid South Africa can recover expenses incurred from a beneficiary who misrepresented his financial status. The department does not agree with this. The only way in which Legal Aid South Africa is able to assess whether a person should receive legal aid is on the strength of information supplied by an applicant. There would be an immense administrative and legal burden to grant all applicants legal aid and then claim that. This clause places an obligation on the legal aid applicant who is best placed to make information available as to his or her inability to afford the cost of legal representation. And legal aid of Africa cannot be expected to find applicants are able to afford the state cost, but intentionally fail to properly disclose the need. Clauses 23 and 24, Legal Aid South Africa proposes that these two should be stopped, so that clause 23 becomes 24 and vice versa, because regulations have legislative status and should be preceded the provisions dealing with administrative issues. Clause 23 provides for the manual and clause 24 for regulation. The department has no specific questions.
I think we don't know the problem. We actually had it that way, Chris. We had it the other way around. It was taken all by the jury's certification process, swapped it around, and we wouldn't mind going back to the way it was, where you deal with regulations first and then the administration.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Clause 24.1A1 provides that the minister must, after receipt of recommendations of the board, make regulations relating to the types of matters, both civil and criminal, in respect of legal aid South Africa, does not provide legal aid. The Code Bar Council comment is that the provision that requires the regulations to check out the types of matters in respect of which legal aid does not provide legal aid is too wide and inflexible. It allows no room for any discretion which could possibly be challenged. Our response is the Code Bar Council concedes that there will be circumstances where legal aid may be refused. Clauses 3 and 41G dealing with the object of legal aid South Africa and the power and functions of the board indicate unambiguously that legal aid must be made available as envisaged in the Constitution, this Act and any other law. In regulations are prepared and promulgated by the Minister after the receipt of recommendations of the board, care will be taken in the normal course to ensure that the regulations comply with constitutional imperatives and that any exclusion of legal aid can be justified. There are limited resources and state care by law general application limit the rights to legal representation, subject to such provision meeting constitutional muster.
Can't hear.
Thank you, Chairperson. Clause 341A also was commented on. This is the same one we just spoke about. The minister must also receive the recommendations of the board make regulations to the types of matters, civil and criminal. And the Women's Legal Center commented that the types of matters for which legal aid representation is provided should be reconsidered as spelled out in the legislation itself. The department's response is that this aspect is currently dealt with in the legal aid guide, which has no legislative status. The types of matters for which legal aid will be made available will be dealt with in the regulations once the bill is passed. Regulations will have the force of law and are considered to be legislative instruments. The regulations must also be tabled in Parliament, so there will be parliamentary oversight. It is moreover expedient to deal with issues of this nature by way of regulation, which can be amended relatively quickly should circumstances so discussed. Comments will be obtained from the role players when the regulations are drafted.
Regulations in terms of clause 24 be submitted to the table in Parliament at by the minister at least 30 days before they are published in the index. Chair, there have been instances in our legislation in the past to enable the committee of one to consider this because this is such a crucial issue if the regulations are going to determine what types of matters are qualified, what types of matters qualify for the EPAs. Perhaps maybe this provision should go even further that regulations must be approved by Parliament. We have done in the past, as I say, because it's a deal with such a crucial aspect. Some of our board have resolved and have put that requirement in so that there's specific parliamentary oversight approval or non-approval of this really important aspect. We'll never do that, but that might be something the committee wants.
I'm not talking to the approval of the
regulation. I think approval is here with actual access, especially in areas that are really contentious, because we'll be enabling regulations to the Act so that the implementation doesn't become different from what the intention is about.
Yes,
sir.
I think
Thank you, Chief. Clause 24.1b, it provides, it's still on the regulations clause, that the minister must make regulations relating to requirements or criteria that the applicant must comply with to qualify for legal aid. And this is the so-called means test. Women's Legal Center commented that the bill should expressly provide for the periodic review of the means test. And the department's response is that the means test will manifest itself in the regulations. Consideration could be given to a particular provision similar to Clause 21, in terms of which the regulations envisage must be reviewed every 2 years. Alternatively, a provision could be inserted in terms of which South Africa must report on that aspect every year when it reports to Parliament in terms of the PHNI.
I'm just commenting about the review of regulations of CHES. If you wish to much believe in South Africa, we shouldn't actually come up with something that's not relevant to work out. We should actually have a provision that actually indicates, you can say from time to time. it's open, but it's not obligatory. So whenever it is needed, which means because the regulations are going to be approved by the committee, when that needs to happen, that means the committee will actually be informed for the committee to actually participate in the process of submission. From time to time, can you even after 5 years?
I think that only 2 years is too close, but to shut up 2 years also could be problematic in the case where something has to be changed within that 2 years. So I'm not sure if we set laws that the 2 years even require that help, or we say every 3 years unless it is added to do so before the 3 years. But I'm trying not to shut it up also, so that something has to be changed urgently, then it has to wait for 3 years if we go in say 3 years. But 3 years can get too much.
When the
media arrives?
Yeah, when
he arrives. The Department of Energy proposal, that's that Legal Aid South Africa must report on this every year when it comes to Parliament.
I'm happy with that.
What is the position at present to review the review of the only the new test?
Yes, it is a meal test. So,
the entire thing is reviewed in the legal guide, which includes policy and procedures, and it's meant to be reviewed annually.
Yeah.
And we submit annually, but it's never analyzed annually. So there is a problem in the delay. So I think it's never been put and finalized annually because of the fact that it doesn't get processed. So then it gets combined into 2 years, into one, etc. So it does create an administrative problem.
So can we agree that the report annually, that the children must do their work?
Good. Agree.
Thank you. Chief, so 26.1E provides the minister, it's a transitional arrangement clause. It provides the minister must as soon as possible after the commission of this act, but not later than 3 months, they also designate one of the 13 security in paragraph A as deputy person of the board for the 12-month period, the transitional period. The tribal council of the Law Society of South Africa made comment that you not agree that the minister must designate the deputy chair. And this is similar as to the chairperson of the board. And yeah, so it's a sign aspect that must be considered there. The chairperson of the permanent board is the judge, and the chairperson we complete this position in other acts, and there is a trend that the ministers also appoint the deputy chairperson in similar bodies. So actually we do not agree with the type of council's allegations. our response is the accreditation, including the Glasgow Economic Empowerment Policy of GDP practitioners, is currently set out in Chapter 8 of the Legal Aid Guide and will also be set out in the manual, if it goes far, in terms of Law 23.1c. It is not advisable to put a blanket provision of this nature in the bill, as several criteria must be met and the regulations will be the best place to provide for that. The regulations and the manual will have the same status as the Act and must be complied with if it is statutory instruments also.
The regulations are the same state as the Act, the proposal.
Yeah.
To the end of all the comments that have been made, I hope we summarise them correctly and still keep everything that was raised.
No, I was saying that you must not forget that he has got a homework for things that are past that you consider money or flipping over.
So we need just to confirm we're meeting on Tuesday and we're just going to continue with the deliberations on this call, just to make sure that we...
Yes, we continue Tuesday 10 o'clock, Wednesday 3 o'clock, 9:30. I think it will be ready to start writing, have the addition, so that we finalize the work on it. But we're done already very well. What is left, which is not much. Thank you very much. I think we have narrowed the gap. I should be able to find my members have a very good weekend. But don't forget to come back next week. And so that we can see the final result. Thank you very much.